Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
We've taken a look at the political system here in the U.S. and the infusion of spiritual or so-called Christian, liberalism. And I've been talking about such things, the liberalism move within the professing Christian church for some time. But we've also been looking, because of the midterm elections, a lot of different topics and issues, involved with our midterm elections, and have also, of course, been looking forward to speaking about the events concerning the 40th anniversary of Jonestown and the involvement of a survivor of Jonestown, who I heard here in town speak, and who I heard an interview and read some articles from. Her Laura Johnson Cole is her name. And then, of course, looking at the book Cult City by Daniel Flynn. And that's where we were last week. But I want to backtrack just a little and say one more thing. I'd ask that we should pray for Laura Johnson Cole, as she has cancer now. The last time that I had heard and read about her, I saw her and heard her personally here in town at a local university. And one thing I had wanted to mention about her, because she started out as a political activist and an atheist. She went through Jonestown, lost her family, her spiritual family, if you will, through Jonestown, many of her friends, etc., and came out of that, went into another community, Synanon, which is no longer in existence, but was also somewhat of a cultic type community, and through it all landed in the as a Quaker, who apparently are comfortable having atheists amongst their fellowship, because she is both an atheist and a Quaker. And it led me to something I had wanted to share in an earlier podcast, and I failed to do so. But, she reminds me a bit of Bono, the rock group U2. And one of the songs that they did was, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And Bono, of course, also claims to be a born-again Christian, although I think he is exactly what the type of Christian we're talking about, the progressives, the emergence, what I would call is really fake Christianity, and Christianity that promotes a social gospel and not the true biblical gospel of salvation, looking to the next life, eternal life, and not setting up some type of paradise here on earth through some socialized social gospel type mechanism. And so I would see Laura Johnson Cole as a person who, probably could sing that song, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Apparently, the Quaker communion has helped her in some ways. Without having God, she can have some sense of community. But anyway, we all have to make choices in life. And so pray for her healing, and mostly, of course, for her salvation. Pray for Bono. I don't know anybody's heart, but that's the point of my program, is to bring us, to bring us discernment concerning the deception that we see all around us in these last days. And so I want to remember to pray for those that I discuss on the program as people who I think are blind leading the blind, if you will, and people who will lead people to really away from the truth, away from the true gospel and the true Christ, to a Christless eternity. And that's what we, of course, want to try to help people not do. We want people to come to the true God, the true gospel, the true Jesus, the true Savior. And so anyway, that's what I do, and those of you who listen to my program regularly know that. So but I did want to include that, as I had forgotten to mention that last week, those particular comments about Laura Johnston Cole. Now, getting back to last podcast last week, we looked at a couple of interviews, radio interviews. Originally, I had heard Janet Mefford, a Christian program, a very good program in my opinion. She has some really good people on her program for interviews. And she had Daniel Flynn, and I thought, wow, that was fascinating. couldn't find the original interview that she had done online anywhere, so I listened to Eric Metaxas and Ross Kaminsky, a couple of other radio personalities and talk show hosts, and we shared some of the notes that I took from those, and also then, of course, we wanted to look at four articles and reviews concerning Cult City, the movie, I mean the book, I'm sorry, written by Daniel Flynn. And maybe they'll make a movie of that, just like they made the movie about Harvey Milk's life. But anyway, I had left off in an article from the American Conservative blog here. It's called Jim Jones and Harvey Milk, The Secret History by Rod Dreher. And I'm going to start that article over again so I can bring you back up to snuff. If you weren't here last week, I encourage you to check out the archived podcasts from the past. But this particular article, it says next month marks the 40th anniversary. This was in the month of October of this year, but or of the year of 2018, I should say. But this is, you know, why I heard Laura Johnson Cole at a local university, because she had a book out about her experience surviving this. And of course, Daniel Flynn wrote this book just in time for the 40th anniversary of Jonestown suicide. Of 900 members of the People's Temple cult. And but his book, of course, it was very fascinating because he showed the political backdrop of what was taking place in San Francisco, where Jones moved his cult from Indiana to out to California, and his involvement. But anyway, let me get back to the article. This next month marks the 40th anniversary of two landmark events of American popular culture: the assassination of pioneering gay politician Harvey Milk and the mass suicide of 900 members of the People's Temple cult. If you remember anything about the mass suicide, it's probably that cult leader Jim Jones was a fundamentalist Christian demon whose Bible thumping berated brainwashed followers into drinking cyanide-laced Kool-Aid. And of course, that's the first lie. He was not a fundamentalist Christian. He was a liberal, a progressive, non-Christian socialist, or really a communist, who was, of course, a wolf in sheep's clothing. Harvey Milk, by contrast, is a folk hero. The San Francisco supervisor became a gay rights saint because he was martyred by a right-wing fanatic, or at least that's how the story goes. He's saying, if you remember anything about the suicide, and of course, I guess he could have said, and if you remember anything about the Harvey Milk assassination, you would remember, because this is what the left would want you to remember, that Jim Jones, of course, was a conservative, he was a fundamentalist, and that Harvey Milk was a martyr, martyred by a right-wing fanatic, which, of course, Dan White wasn't true, was also very much liberal himself, the man who killed Harvey Milk. He says, that's the received history in both cases, but according to author Daniel Flynn, it's scarcely truth at all, but rather propaganda, and the way history remembers these men and the time and place that made them offers a dire warning to us today. Flynn's new book, Cult City, Jim Jones, Harvey Milk, and 10 Days That Shook San Francisco, is a bold, at times shocking work of revisionist history that challenges what we think we know about both men and the murderous events that brought them to national prominence. You know, here's the facts. The inconvenient truths, if you will. Flynn reveals that Jones was, in fact, a socialist fanatic who, far from theological and cultural fringes, was a key player in left-wing San Francisco politics. Flynn also shows that Milk was an opportunist and a showboater who was willing to use extremist rhetoric, and in one case indulge in outing to advance his political career. His assassin was not a homicidal homophobe, but a hot-headed former political ally furious over Milk's political betrayal. And most bizarrely of all, Milk and Jones were friends and allies, Jim Jones and Harvey Milk. That was the kind of place San Francisco was in the 70s, says Flynn, who agreed to do an interview with me by email. And so this was the interview that was done with Rod Dreher. I was shocked to discover that Jim Jones and Harvey Milk were allies in the politics of 1970s San Francisco. Before we get into the details of that alliance, what does the fact that it existed have to do with the title of your book, Cult City? He says San Francisco suffered the hangover after the high. He said, following the day-glow 1960s, exemplified by the Summer of Love, Haight-Ashbury, and Golden Gate Park's Human Being, San Francisco became a very dark place. The Zodiac Killer taunting the cops, the zebra murders racially targeting white people, the terrorism of the New World Liberation Front leading to a bomb placed on Dianne Feinstein's windowsill, among other frightening acts. The Symbionese Liberation Army's kidnapping of Patty Hearst, and that was, of course, of the Hearst publishing firm, the newspaper magnate, and so much else made a beautiful city ugly. Political crazies and just plain crazies intermingled with little to differentiate the two. This worked as the ideal milieu for Jim Jones and People's Temple. It fit into its time and place, even if it stands out to us 40 years later. So that's quite a bit of history there of the 60s and the radical 60s and the things that were taking place. The Temple's politicized theology really grabbed Harvey Milk, a man hitherto largely indifferent to faith. Jim Jones promoted gay rights, which appealed to Harvey Milk. Beyond this, he provided his campaign's volunteers, a printing press, and publicity through his widely distributed newsletter. When Milk organized a fair on Castro Street, People's Temple provided professional-level entertainers. When his lover committed suicide, Temple members sent dozens of condolence letters inviting Milk to visit or even live in Jonestown. Milk clearly found his association with Jim Jones exhilarating. It may take me many a day to come back down from the high that I reached today, he wrote Jim Jones after one Temple service. I was sorry that I had to leave after four short hours. I found something dear today. I found a sense of being that makes up for all the hours and energy placed in a fight. I found what you wanted me to find. I shall be back, for I can never leave. And my notes say that was a marriage made in hell, pretty much. In exchange for all that, Milk provided legitimacy for Jim Jones. He spoke at People's Temple. He praised it in his column in the Bay Area Reporter. He lobbied on Jones's behalf to President Jimmy Carter, Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, Joseph Califano, I mentioned that last week, Guyanese Prime Minister Forbes Burnham, and other powerful figures. You know, before they went to Guyana, apparently Harvey Milk had lobbied on behalf of Jones to the Prime Minister of Guyana. And other, as Cult City shows, this proved disastrous for many people. So many local leaders enthusiastically vouching for Jim Jones made it easier for people in positions of responsibility far away to dismiss the charges against him as fantastical. Before the poor drank Jim Jones Kool-Aid in South America, the powerful did in San Francisco. Now, Rod Dreher, who was doing this interview, he says, I was a kid when the Jonestown mass suicide took place and always assumed that Jim Jones was some kind of fundamentalist Christian. In fact, he and his People's Temple were very much the opposite. What were they really about? He said, I had the same experience. I wrote about it briefly in the acknowledgments. Perhaps we both thought that because media initially reported this Bible-thumping Jim Jones as fact, and that first draft of history stuck. And, of course, I made the same comments I did last week, that the liberals always do this. Whenever the mass shootings take place, they immediately try to prove it was a right-winger. You know, before they know much of anything, they want to try to use it for their political advantage because they lie. That's what they do. The New York Times, for instance, described the New York Times. Now, we know a little bit about their liberal bias. The New York Times, for instance, described Jones' preaching as fundamentalist Christianity immediately after the tragedy. They knew better. A.M. Rosenthal, the managing editor of the paper, several years earlier ridiculed the first expose on the temple by a religion writer in the San Francisco Examiner, explaining to a temple member, "We do expect to be attacked by people like Lester Kinsolving and others who have political axes to grind." In reality, People's Temple used the trappings of Pentecostal Christianity to win over large numbers of people to socialism. Jim Jones ridiculed the Bible, stomped on it in front of his flock, and instructed his followers to use it as toilet paper when their supply of the luxury ran out in Jonestown. The rest that Temple Survivals told me about this really dropped my jaw, he said. The Nation, you know, this is an article, this is a publication, stood as one of the few outlets to accurately report on People's Temple's outlook in the aftermath of the tragedy. "The temple was as much a left-wing political crusade as a church," the Weekly noted. In the course of the 70s, its social program grew steadily more disaffected from what Jim Jones came to regard as a fascist America and drifted rapidly toward outspoken communistic sympathies. In members occasionally donning red uniforms, frequently singing the Internationale, and teaching Russian to Jonestown inhabitants, People's Temple advertised its political creed. Jones even politicized the group's grisly coda, calling it revolutionary suicide, as though the nihilistic act contained some higher ideological purpose. Who Jones borrowed this revolutionary suicide concept from and how it slowly developed within the temple may surprise a lot of readers. Now the next question Rod Dreher asks, the received story about Harvey Milk is that he is a secular saint. In fact, as you show, he was sexually involved with underage boys, and he was willing to use slanderous extreme rhetoric against his opponents, even other gay people. Why have these facts been shoved down the memory hole? He said, Daniel Flynn answers, when a supporter discovered that Milk had fabricated a tale of a dishonorable discharge from the Navy, only in San Francisco would a politician lie about his honorable service to enhance his credibility. Milk responded, "Symbols, symbols, symbols." In death, Milk, the man, became Milk, the myth, a human symbol of something greater than himself. Men are complicated. Myths, not so much. The need to be neat and pure. Gays, understandably, tried to make sense of a senseless act. Rather than a petty man seeking murderous redress for a petty grievance, the assassination of Harvey Milk became an act of homophobia and its victim a martyr of the gay rights movement. Part of this mythology involves creating a caricature of Dan White, who was, of course, the assassin, and his motives. What I discovered about Milk's assassin from interviewing people close to him really floored me. I will leave all that for the book. The other part of the equation of the mythologizing informs Transforming Harvey Milk, who authored one single city ordinance, sensibly ordering dog owners to clean up the mess their pets leave, in his 11 months in office, into a colossal figure and a secular saint. So he authored one single city ordinance in 11 months, but somehow he became this colossal figure and a secular saint. All of that great work he did, right? At least he had the dog, you know, he had the owners picking up their mess. Now they've got humans leaving mess. I'm ad-libbing here a little bit, but now they're having problems with the homeless people, the promoting of socialism and all, leaving their mess all over San Francisco. But anyway, I digress. Saints require saintliness. Harvey Milk acted as a great friend, demonstrated a terrific sense of humor, exhibited an amazing penchant for reinvention, and tenaciously served the causes in which he believed. He was not a saint. His biggest critics are not right-wingers. John Briggs, a retired California politician best known for an anti-gay bill, clearly conveyed to me in our conversation how much he enjoyed Milk's company, but gay men, several of whom spoke to me for this book. In other words, the biggest critics are not right-wingers, but gay men, several of whom spoke to me for this book. Other gay men jealously guard Milk's legacy. One refused to answer my questions, but instead began asking me questions about my book. There's a Balderized quality to books on Harvey Milk. I hope this book helps to change that. Affirmative action history with varying standards for people according to identity politics isn't history, it's propaganda. My aim is not to make Milk into a monster, but a man. Men are flawed. Men who seek to worship a man find this hard to accept. The next question that Rod Dreyer asks, Jim Jones has been largely forgotten today, but I think it matters that people today, if they think of him at all, remember him as a lone cult crazy, like a predecessor of David Koresh or Warren Jeffs. In fact, before he exiled himself and his congregation to Guyana, he was a mainstream left-wing figure of his time and place. Why has our historical memory been falsified? Jim Jones held private meetings with Jimmy Carter's running mate, Walter Mondale, and his wife, Rosalind Carter. And I mentioned, I saw a photo of that, of he and Rosalind Carter, Jim Jones posing with her, during the 76 presidential campaign. San Francisco Mayor George Moscone appointed him chairman of the city's housing commission authority, I mentioned that last week, effectively making him the city's largest landlord. Scary when thinking of how he treated his tenants in Guyana. Okay, there's a little sarcastic humor there. Jane Fonda, I mentioned that last week, Huey Newton, Angela Davis, both black, radical Black Panther Party members, and others heaped praise upon him. That is Jim Jones. And Willie Brown compared him to Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi. Jones was very much in with the in crowd. Then he orchestrated the murders of more than 900 people. At this point, the evangelical atheist and committed communist morphed into a power-hungry fascist, in the words of Walter Cronkite, and his followers became religious zealots, in the words of the Associated Press. The reasons for this Jedi mind trick appear pretty obvious. Many powerful politicians killed investigations of People's Temple. Many famous journalists, including San Francisco Chronicle mainstay Herb Kahan, acted as boosters for Jim Jones. Many had blood on their hands. Beyond this, Jones discredited the politicians who aided and abetted him and the political causes they valued, so they turned him into something he was not. When one thinks of weak but frequent attempts to link mass murders to political figures without any evidence, one thinks of the lame gambit to tie Tucson mass murderer Jared Lee Loeffner to Sarah Palin and the Tea Party, the disassociation of Jim Jones from the very real friendship and alliances he forged with San Francisco Democrats allies astounds. He was close to Supervisor Harvey Milk, future San Francisco Mayor's Willie Brown, and of course we've mentioned this last week, and Art Agnos, and California Lieutenant Governor Mervyn DeMille, who actually made a pilgrimage to Jonestown and colored himself impressed. On the other hand, the fact that so many journalists had skin in the game helps explain why, after providing laudatory coverage of Jones during his life, they danced around the subject of his famous friends and fashionable causes after his death. Journalists had compromised themselves. Well, that's still going on all the time, of course. But anyway, the question Rod Dreyer asks, you say in your conclusion that the lessons of Jonestown remain unlearned. Explain. And then, of course, I made a note there that I think Laura Johnston Cole, I think, seems to fit there to some degree. She's, of course, wanting to warn and people to have more discernment about cults, etc., and yet she still holds to atheism and liberal politics, liberal activism, etc. So, again, pray for Laura Johnston Cole. You say in your conclusion that the lessons of Jonestown remain unlearned. Explain. Daniel Flynn answers, people lied, people died. People died, people lied. Says Jim Jones could not have killed 918 people without politicians, journalists, and activists running interference for him. They mistook ideology for ethics, a mistake common to fanatics of all stripes. Rather than learn from this mistake, they compounded it by portraying Jones posthumously as someone he was not, to protect their ideology, shield their political skullduggery, and absolve themselves from the journalistic sin of performing PR or public relations instead of real reporting. And of course, if it was bad back then, I follow the news and current events quite a bit, and it's just amazing to me all the fake news and all the stuff that comes out of all of the major liberal networks. But anyway, in other words, I think it's worse than ever, but of course 40 years ago it was going on. He goes on to say, the article goes on to say, Cult City is a case study in the worst that can happen when powerful people look away from evil because the evildoers share their politics. This repeats itself in the Jonestown postmortem, which witnesses a massive attempt to suppress the whole point of People's Temple to promote left-wing politics. Because the truth discredits famous people and favored causes, the cable TV documentaries and newspaper retrospectives that surely commemorate the 40th anniversary of the tragedy next month go into contortions to maneuver around the truth. Jim Jones believed in making heaven on earth. Like so many others devoted to that proposition, he ended up making hell on earth. Jonestown and the politicians who helped make it happen is a truly amazing story, but an untold one. I think curious people who want to know the truth of what happened in this stranger-than-fiction tale will want to read my book. And again, I haven't read the book, so I can't say go read the book, but I would imagine some of your appetite has been whetted, as mine is, as I found this information fascinating and helpful in light of the current political climate and spiritual climate that we're in. So we need to learn the history. We need to learn the lessons of the past. Jim Jones himself had the quote from a philosopher, I think George Santana, I'm not sure if that's a pronunciation, but a philosopher. He said that those who forget the past are basically, they're in danger of repeating the past. And that's, I'm butchering the quote, but that is often the case. If we don't learn the histories of history and of the past, we often will repeat those same mistakes. So, thank you for bearing with me. That was a pretty long article, and I know that it was a lot for me to read, but I did want you to hear that article. And we want to go over a couple more articles concerning Cult City. I think it's worthwhile, Daniel Flynn's book, next week on next week's podcast. So God bless you. I hope you all join us again next week. Good night.